Hello you, it's the Audio Drama Production Podcast, the podcast all about audio drama production. My name's Matthew and I'm joined today by my friend and comrade Robert. Good day, sir.
Tally-ho to you.
Yes, indeed. So we return once again to this studio that we commandeered a couple of weeks ago at the college. Worked out quite well for us. Here we are again. Much better than the old car, isn't it?
Yeah, it's much more of a dead room. It's much more of a room, in fact, than a car.
Although we still do use the Zoom H5 with the two lavalier mics because you never know if the college have paid their electricity bill. You know, the power here can go out at any moment, can't it?
So, yeah, or develop a fault or whatever. So stick to what we know.
And coincidentally, we are talking this week about finding and or creating recording environments for your audio drama. Robert, this was something that came up last week. We were honoured guests of Mike Russell's world record-breaking 36-hour-long podcast. We joined them for one of those 36 hours to talk about audio drama and fiction podcast production. We were basically talking people through the various stages of what you would need to do, what you need to know before they dive into producing something like this. And we were discussing recording environments, weren't we? So we covered the options available to you, recording at home, recording out in the field, or hiring a studio or some sort of rehearsal space. And I thought that maybe merited us diving a bit deeper into this topic. I know it's something that we have revisited time and time again, but I don't think we've dedicated a sole episode to it. So, Robert, it's something we've always struggled with, isn't it? Finding somewhere to record an audio drama when we were in the position to have the luxury of actors instead of using a remote cast.
Yeah, that's right. In fact, I'm sure you'll recall, we recorded one or two episodes of Aftermath in this very room back in the day.
Yeah.
Back in 2012, I guess it would be. And yeah, we were worried even then that we wouldn't be able to use this place forever. So we thought about what we could do. Remote acting obviously helps in some ways because they've got their own places. But to actually have a studio, a proper room dedicated to the producer and his or her actors, it's always going to be an issue. And yeah, it's a worthy topic for today, that's for sure.
I suppose starting with the home recording setup, and we're more discussing environments here today. I mean, we'll touch on equipment, but it's more about your recording environment because I often think that this is overlooked. It's a common mistake early on, certainly. I think we kind of thought along those lines of, you know, if you get a top of the range mic, that's you sorted. But it's very much, you know, environment. Learn to use an environment before you learn to, well, not learn to use equipment, but start upgrading your kit before you're even recording in somewhere that's really acceptable. So the first thing you have to decide on, I suppose, is if you're purely focused on recording the voices or if you're working around the mics. And what I mean by that is if you're treating it more like a film set or a TV set, where, you know, you're going to be doing these movements, you're capturing that, you're capturing a bit of sound effects and a bit of ambience
in
the recording. Yeah, or if you just want that dry voice because you want to place that character maybe on the top of a mountain or in a submarine or wherever, you know, you just need the voice. So that's a decision you have to make early on. And obviously, if it's the latter, if you're just looking to record a voice, then that's when you're going to have to think about sound damping conditions, because you don't want this reverb on your character's voices because it limits the places you're going to be able to put them in the scene.
Yeah.
As I say before, if you're sticking somebody outside, you hear this sometimes in audio drama, it sounds a bit like somebody's standing in a bus shelter, doesn't it?
A phone box or something, yeah. And that's one of the big rules, isn't it? One of the real laws of physics when it comes to audio drama is that once you record it with reverb on it, it's there. You're not getting away with it. You're not taking it off. You're not disguising it. It's there forever, isn't it? It's in the DNA.
Yeah, I mean, there are plugins for everything nowadays, and some of them are pretty good, and there are reverb reducing sort of restoration plugins you could get out there, but nothing beats good practices and good source material. It just makes life so much more easy for you. So you want to put at least something in place that you could try and minimize this sort of reverb. Now, an analogy I used when we were on Mike's podcast last week was the golf ball test, because I was thinking about this, that generally if you bounce a golf ball off a surface, be that a floor or a wall or anything else, somebody's head maybe, you could tell that that's similar to how sound is going to bounce off a surface. So if you've got a room with a lot of soft surfaces, curtains or duvets up or things like that, or maybe quite a deep carpet, you're going to bounce a golf ball against these things. It's not going to come flying back at you. But if you're in a bathroom or kitchen, if you've got a lot of tiles or a wooden floor or things like that, then you throw the golf ball and it's going to bounce all over the place. And that's very similar to how the room's going to sound as well. So that's just something you could think of if you're quite new to this and you're looking at rooms in your house, maybe thinking what one's going to sound the best. Obviously, the next step then is to walk around with maybe your recorder or your Zoom and just, you know, speak into it and listen back to it and just hear what room actually sounds the best. But the golf ball test is something you could think of in the early stages if you're completely new to this.
One thing I would add as well, you mentioned a moment ago, it's all very well having a decent microphone, but if you've got a room that's very hard surface orientated, then you're still going to struggle. I would say that's definitely very true. I've just, well, in the last couple of months, bought a studio condenser mic and a vocal shield, and it's really, really good. However, it really doesn't take much at all for me to be able to hear reverb in the room that I've got it in, because at the moment I've just got it in my living room. And that's fine, I haven't used it much for audio drama, but there's just, you know, spend all the money you want, there's no substitute for having a decent environment.
Yeah, so I suppose one of the things you have to think of is, are you setting up a permanent or semi-permanent studio in your house? So is there a room available to you? Maybe it's a walk-in cupboard or an attic or a basement. Are you going to be able to completely commandeer this space, or do your family or flatmates or whatever also require use of it? So if you're in the luxury position of being able to use a room and being able to completely convert this into your studio, there's a couple of things to think of. One of them is external walls. So like, does one of the walls in this room border on a neighbour's house? Because remember, there's going to be certain sounds that you've got no control over. This was one of the things I was aware of, Robert, when I moved into my new house, because obviously I set up that small vocal booth, which really only fits one person comfortably. And I've got another walk-in cupboard that's a lot bigger. It would have cost a bit more to kit that out. But I was also aware that it was an external wall, and you know, I'm long in the tooth enough that if I'd done that, I knew that Dave Grohl would move in the next day yeah, with his drum kit right on the other side of that wall. And what are you going to do? You know, even if it's like somebody who's a bit deaf and has a television set at the other side of the wall, they're not thick walls.
Yeah.
So you arrange a recording session and suddenly you've got a TV playing, you've got music playing or a dog barking. You can't really control what's coming out of your neighbour's house, can you?
Yeah, or even if it's like next to their bathroom and every time they flush or go to the shower or whatever, and you can actually hear the water rumbling through the walls. It's amazing how much this sound carries over when it's into a microphone as opposed to your ears, which naturally just block it out. Cupboard doors and stuff, it's amazing how much it does transmit. And yeah, it's a good idea for you to not be directly onto that, otherwise you'll be having to wait till 2 a.m. to do your recording.
Yeah, pipes as well, like if you're in I've lived in a few older buildings in my life, and pipes could be quite bad. You just, I don't know if it's somebody next door flushes the toilet and pipes seem to squeak and things like that. So yeah, if you're in an older building, that might be an issue as well. Another thing is windows. Like, what's right outside your window? Is it a busy high street? Or do you live in quite a rural area where you're not going to be too troubled with noise outside? Because you could do a great job dealing with the reverb and that in the room, but you're going to have external noise outside as well.
Yeah, that's right. And if you're doing it at home, which so many of us do, you have to think about the floor as well. Does it creak when you walk around? I mean, it might be okay for you just to stand still and talk, but if you're going to be stood in roughly the same spot for any amount of time, you're going to start to move around on your feet. When you do that, are you making the biggest crunches in the world? And it's amazing, again, how much that carries over. when I was at uni, for instance, and this is an actual radio studio they had just one or two floorboards that kind of rumbled when you walked, and you didn't really hear it that much at the time when you're busy thinking about what the lines that you're speaking. But then when you go back to the tape, you know what I mean? You can actually hear it and you think, wow, that's really loud. It's like somebody's moving a piano upstairs. So it's one good thing about this studio we're in, actually, is the floor is obviously concrete and solid.
Yeah.
There's no wood that's been left over time to warp and be ready for the unsuspecting foot for it to have a big growl, you know? So it's something you might need to spend a little bit of time thinking about. Walk around, you know, record it with a microphone even. Just walk around and see if it's going to give you a lot of snarl, and it's something you should be aware of.
Yeah, because these noises, especially if they're noises in your house, you're so familiar with these noises that you don't actually, your ears just tune them out, don't they? And it's only when you open up a microphone that you're like, oh, hang on a minute, you know, even though I know this sound happens, I've just completely disregarded it. Other noises as well to be aware of, again, I touched on, if you're moving into some sort of cupboard or basement or attic, you can have things like boilers, you could have gas meters, water tanks. Again, you maybe won't immediately imagine there's going to be noise coming from these, but even like the lowest hum or, you know, a water tank filling up, or sometimes you get gas meters that do that wee sporadic click as well sometimes. So imagine you're in the middle of a really good take and you get this click and you have to start again. And fair enough, it's a minor thing, but it's something to be aware of as well.
Yeah.
Robert, one thing we did in the past, we were doing some recording at my house and the fridge was really loud, I remember. we were recording the show Time is Money, and this was a tip from Rick Veers in the Sound Effects Bible. I'll put a link to that book in the show notes. And he recommended that when you were recording things around the house and you have to switch the fridge off, because obviously you're going to forget to switch it back on. So he recommended that you put your car keys in the fridge. So that obviously will only work if you're planning on driving later on in the day.
Yeah.
But it's a good tip. I suppose you could say put your phone in there, but I don't imagine a phone would survive unless it's a Nokia, was it a 3310?
That's the one, yeah.
Industrial.
Yeah, I try and think of something that's obvious, like even if you put...
One sock.
Yeah, put a sock on the door handle so that you don't just go to bed.
As long as it's a sock you were wearing.
Yeah. Yeah, something that will just jolt your memory that, oh yeah, I've got to go and put the fridge on, because you don't want to lose it all, you know, everything that's in there. I've done it myself, actually. I've turned the fridge off and then forgotten. Only when I've looked, I think it was my phone, actually. I thought, oh, where is my phone? Oh, for heaven's sake. And away and turned it back on.
So what about if you're actually looking to create some soundproofing or sound dampening then, Robert? In the past, again, when I converted that cupboard, I got those soundproof tiles. I think they're 12-inch by 12-inch. So I just measured the cupboard and bought that amount of tiles off Amazon, stuck them on with wallpaper paste, which worked really well. They've not fallen off yet, and they could peel off without like leaving half them on the wall.
Excellent, yeah.
But you don't necessarily need to buy the tiles, do you? You could pin up things like duvets and stuff like that as well, curtains, just yeah. Anything that's soft and going to catch the sound and stop it bouncing back at you.
I've heard of people trying to set things up like almost like a giant clothes horse or something on a rail that you can then pull down and use to record and then put up again so that you're not taking up the entire living space with it. But it all seems like a lot of work, if you know what I mean, and it's going to fall over at some point and all the rest of it. I'd be really tempted to try and get a space where possible and put the stuff up on the walls, because once it's there, it's there, and it's not like a huge piece of apparatus that's dangling a duvet down. I mean, a duvet is actually quite heavy as well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and
you're going to need more than a drawn pin to hold that up, aren't you?
Yeah, that's right. And then before you know it, you've set up a clothesline in the shed and you've got the duvet as a tent and you're in there, and it's okay, but it's not perfect.
Yeah, I remember I set up like this once to try it out, and it worked really well with the reverb. But another thing we should mention is, are you creating a comfortable environment for either yourself or your other actors to perform in? So if you're getting a room to sound really good, Maybe you're switching an air conditioning unit off and it's really, really warm. Maybe you've got the opposite. Maybe you're in a room and it's absolutely freezing. Maybe you're cramming under a duvet, under a clothes horse, like you've just mentioned there. So
yeah,
these might be conditions that you get good sound from, but are they conditions that are comfortable to act in? Is everyone getting a bit tetchy because it's really not that comfortable, and then you don't get a good performance?
And the other thing with that as well is like your studio, your wee studio is great. We can get two people in there and the mic stand, but you know, we daren't move a muscle because yeah, if you move even slightly, your elbow brushes against the partition on the wall, the soundproofing, or if you move your foot an inch to the left, you kick the mic stand and therefore the sound is picked up by the mic. We ruined a lot of takes, me especially, because it's your studio and I wasn't quite familiar with it yet. But in the early days, what a hassle it was trying to train my body to be like a sniper and not move a muscle for 3 days straight, sort of thing, you know. So it's difficult. And if you're doing that, you're spending so much energy making sure you don't touch this, don't touch that, don't kick anything. How much energy are you putting into the acting?
Yeah, it's like you're so aware of all this stuff, aren't you, that like acting's almost become secondary, and that's not how it should be at all.
Yeah, so you need ideally you need a huge studio with no noise, no reverb, no floorboards.
Optimal temperatures.
Yeah, no air conditioning, not a fridge within 50 miles, no lawnmowers outside, no glass windows for cars to go past. Yeah, in other words, try and achieve as much of that as possible, but obviously we're aware that it's not always that straightforward.
Yeah, and just quickly before we move on to talking a wee bit about field and location recording, some of the equipment that we've got experience with using at home, the Focusrite Scarlett 2i2, so that's a great little USB preamp that you could plug into your laptop and run it into Audacity or Audition or Reaper or whatever you're using. And that's got two XLR inputs. So if you've just got the two actors or nobody, you know, no more than two characters at one scene, then that'll do you just fine. If you're recording something with multiple actors, I just recently got a shot of an M-Audio M-Track 8. So that, funnily enough, has eight XLR inputs. And I was able to run that through Adobe Audition. And I was really pleased with the sound of it. It did get very, very hot. There was actually an FAQ on the M-Audio website, and it was like, is my M-Track 8 meant to be so hot? And the answer was yes.
Not so, meant to be, but it's normal.
Yeah.
Makes it sound like a machine gun turret. Like, they're trying to fire in controlled bursts because it will heat up really quickly.
Yeah. And the good old SM58, the Shure Dynamic mics as well, if you're recording at home, it'll do you just fine, and they're not too pricey either. If we move on, Robert, to the great outdoors, which is of course completely free to use and offers us a great natural soundscape built into our recordings. But it's not just as simple as all that, is it?
Yeah, a lot of sites for recording will seem straightforward enough, and they seem really obvious. Like, yeah, I'll just go up this hill and be miles away from everyone, and there won't be any noise. And then you get up there and you think, oh yeah, it's windy. Of course it is. Or you go down to the beach to get the sound of the waves, and you can hear the ice cream van behind you. You can hear traffic. You can hear seagulls going absolutely tonto. You really have to choose with your ears, not your eyes. Because, like we've touched on already today, a lot of the sounds that your brain tunes out will be all too loud by the time you actually record where you are. So by all means, check these places out, have a look, have a listen, close your eyes, even maybe record a sample and just listen back to it and see what comes up.
Yeah, you could imagine, again, you know, we are working on a fantasy audio drama, but if we were starting at the start again and hoping to do some location recordings, there's a lot of very beautiful, picturesque, ancient castles in Scotland. And if you look at a photo, or if you even stand outside one, you might think, what a fantastic location. But of course, it doesn't necessarily sound like an old castle. You might have a car park outside, you've got families walking about doing tours of the place, or somebody's walking their dog, or
big gravel road that leads up to it and people stomping up and down on it.
Yeah, you've got all sorts of different sounds. So it's absolutely about hearing the sound of a location and not looking at it, because it's just going to deceive you if you do that. Some things to look for then on your site. Roads. Roads are always an issue. Again, if you're recording a drama in the modern age and it's not going to be a problem having a road in the far distance, then that's fine. But even if you are recording something where it's okay to have roads, you don't want to be standing too close to one because it's just going to get a bit overwhelming. So be aware of things like tree lines or hedges, you know, the big rows of conifers that you see that kind of border housing schemes for motorways and things like that. They're actually there for a reason because they provide a great natural sound barrier from roads. So if you could get something like that between you and a motorway, then it's going to serve you well because it's, you know, they roads, they could just sound really muddy with the amount of cars that are going past. It's just going to overwhelm your dialogue.
Yeah. So we touched upon actually going to visit a site to have a look at it and have a listen to it, more importantly. One thing to consider as well is if you go one particular day, say you're going during the week and it seems quiet enough, try and consider the difference between that and the weekend. If it ends up being the weekend that you actually go to record the drama, because it might be very different, might be a lot more going on, there might be more people there, there might be a school next door that's busy during the week but not on the weekend, for instance, or you might be in a park and it's absolutely mobbed at the weekend, obviously because all the parents are off and the kids are off school, that kind of thing. Just consider the differences between who's there on the weekend and who's there during the week.
Weather as well, like how exposed is a site? So you go on a site visit to, you know, the top of a hill or a big open park or a beach or somewhere like that, and it's a nice still day, but you know, naturally, as the way things will be, you'll turn up on the day to record and it's going to be blowing a gale or raining. And if there's absolutely no natural shelter or some sort of shelter that you could go to get your recordings, then you need to be aware of that in advance, don't you? You don't want to be turning up there and it's totally useless and you just can't do the recording at all because of the weather.
Yeah, and obviously, if it's going to rain, it's going to rain. You can't always predict it. But just try and think, if there was any kind of wind in this part of the world, how would this particular site compare to the rest? Because, you know, is it a narrow street or something that's going to get a big gust coming up it? Is it up on a hill? You know, that sort of thing. Just have a bit of common sense and think, is this likely to be a windy place compared to anywhere else?
And of course, if you're really organised, you might have a few spots picked out nearby that are maybe your plan B or even C areas. Because if you don't have that at all and you've not considered it and you turn up and you find out you can't record somewhere, you know, not just for the weather but for other reasons, maybe there's a guy cutting a few trees down nearby who wasn't there when you did your visit, it's great to be able to say, well, we have considered this and we've got another site, it's going to take us 20 minutes to drive there, but at least you're not standing there with the shell-shocked face as everyone expects something of you and you're like, no, I'm out of ideas now.
You had like one idea and it's been blown apart by one guy with a chainsaw.
It happens.
Yeah.
Some cheap or affordable gear then for going out and working in the field. The Zoom that we've got here, we're not recording into its internal mics, you know, the nice wee stereo mics on it. But I believe that might have been the model that Campfire Radio recorded their field recorded piece with. And it sounded really good. So you could take like a Zoom recorder or any sort of Zoom recorder out on location and just kind of work around it, act around it. You could also use like the lav mics that we've got here, the ATR3350s. They just plug straight into the Zoom. I think they're about £20, $25. So they're really cheap. Yeah. Microphones. You don't even need one of the more modern Zoom recorders to work these as well. The way we use them through the quarter inch adapters means we could work in two different channels, but you could just get something like the old Zoom H1 and a headphone splitter and you could run them into that. It does mean that, you know, your stereo track's going to be exactly the same on both sides. But these are very affordable bits of equipment and you could take them out. It's not going to cost you too much and you could record some really good stuff with them.
So let's presume just for the moment that you're going to go ahead, you're going to hire a studio or a rehearsal space or a music studio, radio studio, whatever. It's going to cost you money. There's no getting away from that unless you can borrow a college studio like we have today. And it can give you a sense of professionalism, you know, if you do that. If you get everyone together, you're in a proper studio, it does give you that feeling that you're doing something special. So it does have that going for it. But there's a couple of things you should consider as well. Does it have a dead room or sound dampened conditions? Because, like, for instance, if it's a music studio, it might not be that sound dead and it might just sort of be enough for music. But when it comes to actually acting drama, it may not be what you need. So you need to consider that. Does it have a dead room or does it at least sound dampened? Does your hire include an engineer? Do you have somebody on hand to help you out with the equipment that they've supplied? Does it cost extra? Do you need them? Can you do without them? That's something to look into as well. And as I say, does the hire include that equipment or do you have to bring your own? There are people that have turned up to things expecting to be able to get state-of-the-art equipment and all they've got is an empty room. That has happened. So it's something worth checking out. And of course, if it is a music studio, is there more than one room? And is there a band playing next door? Is it Matthew's neighbour that's followed him down to the studio? He's brought his lawnmower and his drum kit and he's ready to practice right on the next wall.
Yeah, this is all just down to your research and your dialogue with a studio that you're potentially going to hire. It's just to ask them these questions. What's included in the price, as Robert said, your engineer or your equipment. You might be a very competent sound engineer yourself, but that doesn't necessarily mean something won't go wrong. You might turn up there and, you know, you've been given a key to one of the rooms and suddenly there's a password on a computer system, you know, and the clock's ticking, you're paying by the hour, you're trying to find someone who could log you in, or there's a microphone or equipment cupboard and you don't have the right key for it. There's all these sort of things that can go wrong and probably will. So it's just good to be aware that there's people there on site to solve these problems for you early, because before you know it, 45 minutes have passed, and if you've hired the place for 2 hours, an hour passes before you're even starting recording, and you know, people get grumpy hanging around and things like that. It's all things we've covered before, but good planning and just very clear with the people you're speaking to at the studio about exactly what's expected of them, what's expected of you, and what the plan is on the day of recording. And of course, equipment-wise, if you're using gear in a studio, you'll probably get access to their really decent vocal condenser mics as well, or to bring the best that you've got yourself, knowing that you're recording in great conditions.
And something else that we did touch upon earlier on was the floor. As I say, it's very likely that if it's a house that's more than a few years old, that will have floors or floorboards somewhere that do creak. But the same, as I say, goes for studios as well. Not such a big problem when you've got guitars and drums all going mad. Nobody's really walking around and nobody hears a floor creak. But when you're doing a really subtle audio drama, it could be that the floor that you're walking around on can give you a bit of a growl. So it's worth checking out that as well.
Some other options, if you're not fancying paying by the hour in a studio, is just to investigate in your local area. Is there a room in a school or a college or a community centre or even a church somewhere that might sound okay? Again, you might not even be requiring a dead room or a soundproof room. You might just be looking for a room that you could do some recordings in. So just look at all these sort of communal and public buildings, make some inquiries, and you never know what it might turn up. And usually these places are either free or very, very cheap. They'll maybe just ask you for a small donation. So
yeah,
Keep your options open and just use your initiative and have a think about some of these places that are local to you.
Good stuff. Let us know how you get on, if it's something that you've been looking at just recently or we're planning to. We're always keen to revisit these topics when we've got more to add, basically. And the reason we'll have more to add is either because it's come up ourselves in our own ventures, or it's because you've given us something to feedback to us. So we'll move on in the meantime. Should we talk about Alien Out of the Shadows? That's exciting.
Yeah, what a big couple of weeks for modern audio drama, wasn't it? Because we had Dirk Maggs's production, Alien Out of the Shadows. So that's an original Audible drama. 4.5 hours long this is. And I've actually nipped on Audible last night and purchased that. And on top of that as well, we've got We're Alive Lockdown, which is been anticipated for some time now, so it's exciting times getting this quality audio drama. I had a you know, a couple of very short listens to both. They sound exceptional, as you would expect. But I'm actually saving them both for my plane journey out to San Diego in June. So
wow.
I'm just going to have to forget about them now, put them on the back burner.
Right.
I want something to look forward to whilst I'm sitting on an aeroplane. So.
Well, I'm all for getting audio listened to at the moment because I'm doing my regular drive an hour each way. The Alien saga, I do love the Alien series, one or two of the films, not all of them. So I'm very interested to hear that. And I think, how good is that? The whole horror thing with Alien in audio. So the listeners there, they can't see the alien because they're not looking at a screen. And they're, you know, imagine you're in a dark room and you're listening to this and you've got what's going on in your ears. I mean, I think that'll be quite an unsettling but a decent experience. I'm really excited to hear that myself.
Yeah, and hopefully it gets a bit of exposure as well. Obviously, the film itself is very, very famous, and we know that Dirk Maggs is going to have delivered, as well as the cast and the writers and everything that have been pulled together for this. So, you know, if it gets a few more ears listening to audio drama, and of course the press that lockdown's hopefully going to get as well. I did see that it was on the front page of iTunes as well, and hopefully that continues to get talked about in the mainstream media as well, because these are productions, you know, back in the day we discovered We're Alive, it caught our attention, and that's going to happen time and time again. You know, what fantastic productions to introduce people to this medium.
Interesting that it's 4.5 hours long, so that's longer than your normal film, isn't it?
Alien 1, yeah.
Yeah, sorry, yeah. But, I mean, even lockdown itself is, what, 6 episodes?
Yeah, I think it's 6, yeah.
So that's 6 times, say, an average of 50 minutes. You know, so that's about 4 or 5 hours.
Yeah, it's a good chunk of... I mean, I suppose your average audiobook, if there is such a thing, you're talking maybe between 5 and 7 hours.
Right.
Well, I say that, that's based on, you know, the books I've listened to on Audible, but it might not be an average, it might just be my average, but it's a good chunk of time for your Audible credit, and I don't grudge it one bit. You know, the work that's gone into something like this, and I'm really looking forward to hearing it.
You haven't heard Lockdown yet at all?
No, again, I'm holding off. I'm going to save it
right
for the plane.
Very interesting. I've heard the first episode, and it's funny because despite how good We're Alive was and still is, there is a marked difference between Lockdown episode 1 and We're Alive episode 1. I mean, that's the same for everyone who's ever even remotely thought about making an audio drama, but it's just so good. The production is so good. The writing is good. It's really tight. It gives you a punch straight in. The dialogue is tight. It is excellent. I cannot recommend Lockdown enough. Certainly, just going from episode 1 anyway, I'm really excited to hear the rest.
Yeah, great stuff. And elsewhere as well, just before we get wrapped up, I noticed on Sunday, Archive81 on Twitter started a hashtag audio drama Sunday. So people were posting different audio dramas that they were listening to. And on Sunday, it was actually uncharacteristically warm in Scotland, so I wasn't really online too much. I was sitting in the garden with a tin of beer.
I was going to say,
and
drinking.
My shirt off, yeah. But I did, you'll be proud of me, because I did say to Julia, by the way, this is a false dawn. as is my way. I take no pleasure in that. Every April in Scotland, we get a day of good weather, and I tell everyone it won't last, and it doesn't, because it was sleet coming home there.
Right.
Not to digress too much.
Scottish pessimism.
Yeah.
Like John Logie Baird, when he was congratulated, and this is a comedian's joke, but Frankie Boyle, he said, "Aye, John Logie Baird, well done on inventing the TV." And he went, "Aye, but there's nothing on. Just doer." But well done, yes.
Yeah, Audio Drama Sunday. So I think it's going to be an ongoing thing. If you're on the old Twitter, get a look at that on Sunday. And Archive 81, who started it, it's actually a new audio drama in its own right. It's a found footage style audio drama. I think it's from Boston, which is just firing out the new shows at the moment. It's an exciting place, Boston. But I had a wee listen to Archive 81. Really good. Really intriguing. Heard the first episode. So subscribe to it on the old phone, and I'm looking forward to hearing more from them as well.
On the old podcatcher, your iPod Touch or whatever.
Yeah, synced it to my iPod.
Did we talk about Greater Boston last time?
Yeah, you mentioned it, yeah.
Right, okay, right, move on then, fine.
Boston gets their own segment on this podcast now.
Yeah, New England.
The land of audio drama.
Yeah, well, so thank you to everyone in the Greater Boston area, see how I tied that in, and keep making them. And the rest of you, the rest of the United States and the rest of the world, where's your audio dramas? Keep them coming.
Last thing really to mention, we mentioned it last episode as well, so episode 100 of this humble podcast isn't too far away, and what we want to do is hear the best piece of advice or the best tip or the best practice that you've ever used in your audio drama, something that maybe somebody told you and ever since it's changed the way you write, it's changed the way you produce, it's something that you swear by, and it's something that you're always telling others as well and recommending that others do. So please, you know, you could send an audio file of you saying what it is, or you could just write it in to us and we'll read it out, and you'll get some free promotion for your own show as well if you let us know what audio drama you create, and we'll try and put them all in together on episode 100.
Do you have a tip or advice, bit of advice to start us off?
God, I only talk about making audio drama on every episode of this podcast.
Yeah.
I don't know much about it, to be honest.
Yeah.
Do you?
I do have one bit that springs to mind, one thing that really changed me. So much so that when I first heard it, I was like, no. And it's not panning for a change. It's footsteps that they're overdone. And they are overdone. They're always overdone. Not always, but we used to put footsteps in loads, loud as you like, as often as you like. You know, until that person's left the room, foot.
Yeah, but that was on a Human Centipede fan fiction, so there was a lot of feet.
Curly the tap dancer. Yeah, fame and fortune for him. Footsteps. Whatever you're doing, if you're only doing footsteps for the first time, you're probably doing them too much. Cut down on them. Even consider not having footsteps at all. If you've got a voice that's coming towards the microphone and sort of quiet, getting louder, maybe you don't need footsteps. The fact that you can hear them coming towards the mic is enough to tell the listener that they're coming towards the mic, you know? So less is more. I've said that plenty.
Here's your tip.
Yep.
I won't give mine yet because I'd just be throwing it in there for the sake of it, and I don't want to take up any more of the listener's time, but maybe I'll bring one to the table in episode 100.
Something to do with Doctor Who, maybe.
Get your tips sent in audio or written form or any other form. Send us a PDF or a photo if you want.
JPEG.
I got the email address long. I got it long wrong last week.
You did.
I'm not going to get it wrong this week. It's podcastaudiodramaproduction.com. Boom.
Well done.
So we're done here for another episode of the Audio Drama Production Podcast. Thank you very much for listening. I have been and still am Matthew, and I guess you're still Robert.
Until the weekend at least. And then we'll see. A little surprise in store.
Yeah.
But yeah, thank you very much for listening. Please do get in touch. Anything at all to do with audio drama, or even anything beyond that if it's interesting. And in the meantime, may your hearth be hot because it's a fire.